You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. Mic check, 1, 2, 3. Mic check, and I'm good to go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have a really good podcast, man. I'm joined by my brother from Michigan. When I say brother, I mean my hunting brother, my podcasting brother, Mark Kenyon from the Wired to Hunt podcast, Meat Eater, all that good stuff. And it's entertaining. It is educational. We're going to take a deep dive into a variety of strategies and scenarios that we have implemented or that we have been in the past, and we just kind of talk our way through them. So that's what today's episode about. And of course, whenever the two of us get together, we have fun BSing. And so the first part of this episode revolves around college and high school and from our youth, music from our youth, so to speak. And so, and as music can do many times, you listen to music and it brings you back to someplace. It brings you back to a memory or a moment. And some are crazy, some are good, some are bad. And some can be really fun. Or if you're like me, the music can bring you back to a really, like Mark said, murky. A very murky, a murky memory, because I'll just say it, man. Back in the day, I used to party hard, party pretty hard. And of course, we would listen to music while we partied. So good times on this episode, man. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I'm not going to go too deep into the episode or into the intro here today. However, I do have to talk about the partners on today's podcast, and that is Tethered. If you're looking for a saddle, saddle hunting accessories, make sure you guys are checking out all their new products that they've launched within the last year. We got some carbon fiber type products. You know, they got newer platforms, newer climbing sticks. They got different saddles, saddle hunting accessories. Go check out tetherednation.com. Wasp Archery, variety. Now, these guys do not come out with new products every year. Why? Because they don't need to. Their heads, in my opinion, are some of the best broadheads on the market. WaspArchery.com, fixed blades, mechanicals. Go check out what works best for you. A majority of their heads are still made in America. I do have a discount code, NFC20, for 20% off all Wasp products. VortexOptics.com, man, they got a new lineup of eyewear that they've just released. I've been wearing their sunglasses now for about a month. Dude, they're light on the face. Sometimes, sunglasses or glasses in general, because I wear glasses and contacts, but sometimes after a long day of wearing glasses, It can feel heavy on your face. These do not have that feel. That's one thing that I've noticed. And they have their impact resistant, so they can take a beating as well. And they're very comfortable. So go check out Vortex's new lineup of eyewear. Also, don't forget their apparel line, as well as all of the optics at vortexoptics.com, or you can go to EuroOptic, EuroOptic.com, and enter the discount code 9, the word fingers, so it's the number 9, the word finger 10, 9 finger 10, and receive 10% off of all Vortex Optics at EuroOptic.com. Next, we have Feed Hub. Now, this is a brand new partner to the podcast. And basically what the Feed Hub is it is a device that connects to any SpinCast feeder on the market. And it allows you to remotely monitor and command the SpinCast feeder. It allows you to set times, feeding times. It allows you to evaluate your feed levels within the hopper of the feeder. And so it's pretty sweet, and it's all run through the Moultrie mobile app. So go to MoultrieMobile.com and check out the Feed Hub for those of you who run feeders either all year round or before or after the season has started or ended. So there's that. Code Blue, man, it's getting time. I'm getting ready to place an order for more of the Mox Scrape Kits, their Rope-A-Dope system, along with some scent-free laundry detergent that I like that these guys offer. And so Code Blue is known for their real and their synthetic deer lures, deer scents. They have scent elimination products if you're into the sprays. I'm a huge fan of the Rope-A-Dope system, which is their Mox Scrape Kit, and, you know, of course, other laundry detergents, soaps, and things like that. So CodeBlueSense.com, discount code NFC20. And next we have the Woodman's Pal, which this partnership is now coming to an end. So huge shout out to Woodman's Pal. Thank you very much for spending a year with us. Awesome product. I'll be honest, man, I used it a lot. It's a machete. It's a habitat tool that I keep in my truck, and it allows me to clear out, you know, some shooting lanes. It allows me to clear out some grass and some brush if I'm trying to make an access route, or if I'm trying to, you know, clear up an area to hang a trail camera. So woodmanspal.com. Now, Huntworth is getting ready. Man, I should probably be a little bit more prepared for this, but there's something big going on at Huntworth. They're getting ready to make a new announcement. And so Huntworth. Go check out huntworthgear.com. Check out all of their camo patterns. Check out all of their layering systems. You know, if it's cold, heat boost technology, they got their base layers are straight up legit, man. And you can compare Huntworth, in my opinion, you can compare Huntworth to a lot of what some would call the elite brands. So go check out huntworthgear.com. And then last but not least, hey dude, you're looking for a t-shirt that says I'm a hunter? You're looking for some apparel that says I'm a hunter? Go to fullsneakgear.com. That is my personal brand. We just launched a brand new t-shirt called the Full Sneak Fight Club t-shirt. It's probably my favorite t-shirt that design that we've done so far, and it's $2 fighting on the front of the t-shirt. It's badass, man. Go check it out, fullsneakgear.com. And I believe I have a discount code there as well, FSG10. So FSG10, and that's going to get you 10% off. So if that discount code doesn't work, hit me up and I'll get you something that does. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to download and listen to the Nine Finger Chronicles. Do me a big favor, go to iTunes or wherever you download this podcast and give it a 5-star review. Let everybody know that you enjoy listening to this and that it's fun and entertaining. And I would really appreciate that. So good vibes in, ladies and gentlemen, good vibes out. And here's Mark Kenyon. 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Kenyon.
That was a very silent clap.
Can you hear it?
Kinda.
I think I have noise reduction on this microphone, so that might be why you didn't hear it.
You're very high tech, Dan.
I know. Welcome, man. Long time no talk.
Thanks, buddy. I'm glad glad to be here. Excited to catch up. Always a good time.
Okay. Right off the bat, are you ready?
I don't know what I'm supposed to be ready for, but yes, I'm ready for whatever you got to throw at me.
Okay. You know I throw some curveballs sometimes, right?
Always.
Right. Mark, before we started recording, you said that you graduated high school in 2005, all right?
That is correct.
All right. Name a couple songs. I have a list in front of me. Name a couple songs. I think it's the top 100 songs of 2005. I will see if I can find, name one. Do you know any, like, what kind of music did you listen to in 2005? Do you happen to know?
How about I think it was called In This Club by Usher.
In This Club.
Or I Want to Make Love in This Club.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. That's gotta be a top 100 song that year.
Okay. Let me see if I can find it. In This Club.
It might've been fall of 2004 or spring of 2005.
Okay. Was this something that you would maybe grab a girl at a high school dance and hold her close to that song?
Definitely not like a slow dance.
Yeah.
More like we had a club. I can't remember what it was called, but in where I grew up, there was like a club that you could go into when you were 18.
Okay.
So like an under 21 kind of place.
Yep.
And I remember going there, like a bunch of buddies in the car, bumping music, and that being a song that we were just like pumped about going into this club. I'm pretty sure I'm lining up the right time in my life for that music to be lined up with that. Am I not right?
I mean, it sounds like you could be right, but I'm not seeing it on my list.
Oh, now I gotta Google it. Let me see. Okay, other ones, like there's a song by Sierra. Yeah, it's called Love in This Club, and it came out in 2009. So I'm thinking, or 2008. So that must have been a college thing.
Okay,
there was a song with God, this is horrible. Now I'm really struggling. High school, senior year, music we would have been listening to. Our graduation song was that Kenny Chesney song. The one that everyone used for graduation. Yeah. About like, oh, wow. I feel like I'm failing miserably at this on the spot. Trying to think of any top 100 song from 2005. Lil Jon, yeah.
That would have been close. That would have been close, but I'm thinking that's a little longer. I'm going to start listing some of these right now, and you tell me if you bumped them at all. All right.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
That'll be easy.
Weezer, Beverly Hills.
Oh, love that song.
Yeah,
yes.
Me too.
Love me some Weezer. Okay. Love me some Weezer.
Another really big song of that year.
That was the green album, right? Or the blue album.
I believe it was their second one after da-da-da to destroy my sweater. Whoa.
Yeah. That's
after that album. Okay.
I think that's the blue one.
Then. Yep. Then we have Feel Good Inc. by the Gorillaz.
Ah, yes.
That was a popular song.
That was a good one.
Okay.
Yep.
Kanye West Gold Digger came out that year.
So Graduation, his next album would have been College.
Yeah.
So that one you're talking about, Gold Digger, was that with
Jamie Foxx?
Yeah. But that must have been his second album then, not his first one. His first one was Through the Wire and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. College Dropout or something like that.
Yes, that's it. Yep. Yeah, that's right.
And then we have Fall Out Boy, Sugar, We're Going Down Swinging.
Oh, man, great memories of that. Yep. We would be senior year in my buddy's basement. I learned how to play the guitar towards the end of high school. So my buddy played the drums, and then I had one other friend who played guitar, and the three of us would be in his basement jamming out to Sugar, We're Going Down Swinging by Fall Out Boy.
Yep.
That was one of the first songs I learned on guitar.
Multiple Black Eyed Peas album. I would say that Black Eyed Peas were at the pinnacle right around 2005.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is true. I remember listening to them going to the Grand Haven Coast Guard Festival summer. And a memorable rendezvous with a gal with that song.
I love it. I love it. Oh, and by the way, I was also at the Coast Guard Festival for a couple summers.
And, really?
Yep. When Todd Prignitz, he's from Grand Haven.
Right.
And so we would go back to his hometown and just get after it. For three or four, you know, however many days that is, you know, long weekend.
So much fun.
Oh, lots of fun. The fire.
So much fun.
The fireworks at the every night, or at least one of the nights, was a huge fireworks display.
Yep. That would be right around the moment of said rendezvous.
Yep. And you didn't necessarily see the fireworks, but you might have heard them, right?
No, maybe heard them.
Yeah. There you go. And other than that, just a lot of like some one hit wonders. Mariah Carey's.
How about was Justin Timberlake's "Sexy Back" right around then, or was that college?
I'm guessing that was probably just a little bit after that, because I don't see Justin Timberlake on this list.
Okay.
Gorillaz. Man. There was like. Then you got your, you know, countries.
Yeah.
You know, like Jody Messina, Faith Hill. Ooh, the Pussycat.
Tim McGraw was big.
Yep. Pussycat, Dierks Bentley.
Yeah.
50 Cent, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's what was
those are the days.
Was going on in 2005.
Dude, I love anything from, and I guess this is how everybody is, I think, like any music from high school or early college, like forever lives on as a favorite because like every song you list, I'll be all of a sudden like jumpstart a memory. Like it just happened. Like a memory will come back. Like, I remember where I was when that was playing.
Yeah.
Incubus. I really love Incubus there towards that time period.
Dude, one of the best concerts that I've ever been to was an Incubus concert. Oh, there was a band called Sparta. Or Spartan?
Yeah.
If you can
Sparta.
Yeah, Sparta. And they were pretty heavy, similar to Incubus, and I saw them in concert, and that was the first time I ever went like body surfing and went into a mosh pit, and it was bananas. It was being young. Right, being young.
I think that it would have been in 2005 or 6 that I went to an Incubus concert like that. It was whatever year, like that Megalomaniac song was on, like a Crow something.
A Crow Left of Murder. Yep.
Yes, right when that album came out, we went and saw them in concert, and that was epic.
Yeah, they are so to this day probably one of my top 10, like no order, but top 10 favorite bands of all time.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I loved them. And then right around that time period also, well, all through high school really, Blink-182 was a big one for me.
Yep. Blink-182, Fall Out Boy. Blink-182 mm-hmm. just came out with a new album actually.
Really?
Yep.
I gotta check that out.
It's crazy, some of
their newer stuff has been still pretty darn good.
Yeah. It's crazy watching these guys who you grew up with, and now you know they're closer to our age, right? Or well, my age. And now we have like all these old dudes out still rocking it. Well, shit, the Rolling Stones are still rocking it.
I know. That's some longevity right there.
Exactly. All right, Mark. We're done with it. We're done with the intro, the BS session intro. All right.
Dude, I think we should do an entire podcast someday in which nothing happens the entire show except for we name a song and then you have to tell the first story that comes to mind in association with that song.
Okay.
How good would that be?
All right. Okay. Here's the deal. Before we end our, we're going to do a test drive of it. Okay.
Okay.
You have to name the song and then you have to tell a memory of it. What do you think? Have you had your 20th reunion yet? No.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is this October your 20th reunion? Or no, that would be
one year. I graduated in 05, so it'd be 2025 be my but no, I didn't go to my 10-year reunion. I don't know if it's a thing anymore for like our generation.
I don't know. I went to mine and it was an absolute blast. And I had more fun at our 20th reunion than I did our my 10th reunion, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, because everybody's got kids. Everybody hasn't been out of the house in a while. Like, they're like responsible adults anyway. And so it's like, okay. And it was in October, so I was already down in my hometown hunting that weekend anyway. And so I just showed up, and it was like, dude, the whole crew I ran with showed up, and it was pretty fun.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
Ours, like, trickled, or when they tried to do the 10-year anniversary, it was like a mess. The people who were trying to organize it didn't have it figured out. And then they eventually got to a point where they were ready to collect money ahead of it. And the person who was supposed to be running all that collected everyone's money and then bailed with the money, stole everyone's money.
Are you serious?
And just like peaced out. I'm dead serious.
Did they go to jail?
Money, I don't know. Obviously wasn't involved in it. But there was a Facebook group that was created by our class, and there was just this nonstop chaos on there that I just would just kind of lurk and like read the comments and stuff and read about what was going on. But it was hilarious and it was a shit show.
Okay. All right. Name a song and then name the memory that is attached to it. Name a song.
So
in a memory.
You're telling me to name a song.
Yep. Because we're kind of in different eras. A little bit. There are some overlapping, but I should say, what kind of music did you listen to the most of growing up?
Man, it was eclectic. It was a combination of like three things. I listened to a lot of like kind of alt rock, like, you know, Blink, Incubus, whatever.
Yep.
Listened to a lot of country. Yep. And then, you know, rap and all that kind of stuff, right? I mean,
yeah.
And we're going parties and stuff, is that kind of thing. So at first I was just like trying to think of random things, and a song from 808s and Heartbreaks came to mind, which was an album that Kanye West put out in college, when I was in college.
Okay.
The song, God, now I gotta get the title right. 808s and Heartbreaks, while I'm searching this.
Say You Will. Welcome to Heartbreak. Heartless.
Heartless. It would have been Heartless.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure it was Heartless. And we're like drinking. Like, you know, you start drinking at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. And then you just go the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And so I just remember like you'd start like the pregame party Thursday afternoon as soon as class was done. And me and my roommate had this album going on. He had like a keyboard in his room. He was the guy who I played guitar with back in high school.
Okay.
And now we're living in an apartment together during college. And we would put this album on and just sit there jamming away on his keyboard horribly. And it would just be like, see whoever could sound the best. And then whoever couldn't make it kind of go along to the album would have to drink. I remember playing Quarters. Did you ever play Quarters?
We played Quarters, yeah.
Yeah. So this would be in the dorm rooms. I remember we would have Eric Prydz' Call on Me. Do you know the song Call on Me?
Yeah.
Ba-da-da. Yeah.
Yep.
So that song, for whatever reason, a roommate of mine, freshman year of college, was really into that song and the music video. The music video is epic if you've ever seen that. And so we'd have these epic like pregame parties going on at the, you know, it'd be Thursday or Friday afternoon with that song going, and we'd all learn to do the dance to it. And so anytime we'd be at like a house party or the bar or anything, if that song came on, everyone in like our group would start doing the stupid like 80s aerobatics or acrobatic or aerobics dance. And then I became the person who had to do the towel dance. There's a moment in that music video where there's like a girl in a leotard who lays on the ground and then takes a towel and like runs it up her body.
Yeah.
And so as a freshman, I somehow got the job of being the towel person. And so for all of college, no matter where I was, like if it was like a dirty basement, if it was a bar covered in beer on the floor, wherever I was, if that song came on and I was with any of my friends from that time period, that whole thing would go down and I would lay on the floor and like find a shirt or a towel or a napkin or something.
Yeah.
And do that.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go. That's great. Those are great memories. I'm trying to think, well, it's funny because in the last couple months, I had a podcast about alcohol and how much I honestly abused it, basically mm-hmm. when I was younger. And so a lot of my memories are not really memories.
We've got real murky recollections exactly. tied to these songs. And I think I was wearing blue on that day.
It's like I can remember a while ago, I ran into some guys at an Iowa tailgate that I went to college with. And I was like, hey, do you remember this? And they're like, no. Hey, Johnson, do you remember when you did this? No. Like, nope. So some of the best fun I ever had, I'll never remember, probably. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
we're fortunate we made it to this point, Dan.
Exactly. Exactly. So there is a bar in Cedar Falls, Iowa called Suds. And that was my hangout Thursday nights. Just like you, I stacked all my classes Monday through Thursday. And then, mm-hmm. And then I'd work throughout the week too, but then Fridays I would go to the bar, I'd work, and then right at noon I'd get off, or 1 o'clock I'd get off. And then we had something called FAC, which was Friday after class. And okay. And then we would get there kind of before it would start, and we would just load the jukebox at the bar with our song list, basically. So nobody, and this was before digital, like the you could right. skip it. So we had yep. like two or three straight hours of music just pegged, and it was the same playlist every time. But there was one song called Family Tradition by Hank Williams Jr. And yep. whenever that song would come on, we started getting a little rowdy in the yep. in the bar, like slamming shots, throwing beer at each other, just like making all of the bartenders that we tipped very well always have that thought, like, okay, if I kick him out of the bar, how much money will I make tonight, type of right. deal.
So, is it worth dealing with us or not?
exactly.
Yeah.
And so that song's on, we're getting a little rowdy, and this girl was sitting at this table. There's, you know, a whole bunch of us sitting at a table, and this girl on her keychain had pepper spray, and she was fiddling with her keychain, and it sprayed across the entire bar. Pepper spray went across my chest. It hit my buddy in the face, hit another guy down, like just the whole bar cleared out. And now every time I hear Family Tradition by Hank Williams Jr., I think of getting pepper sprayed.
Are you sure that that was an accident?
I said no.
Psst. Yeah, exactly. You're just that murky recollection of yours, Dan.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah. So, memories.
Yeah, memory lane.
Well, what do you think? Should we talk about some whitetail stuff?
I guess we could.
We could. All right.
I've got a great story about, What's Up Pussycat that would be worth watching someday. It's a John Mulaney story.
Okay.
But I won't go into that.
What's Up Pussycat? All right. So
you know that
Google
song?
It. Yeah. What's Up Pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. How do we, just say hard pivot?
Yeah.
There we go. Hard pivot into this topic.
Hard pivot.
Yep. All right, so maybe you have a scenario or a situation where this has happened before, And basically what I'm trying to get out of you is maybe a specific example where, hey, this did happen to me, or what would you do if this did happen to you? And then maybe we'll just kind of, we'll start here, walk us through these different scenarios. But recently I checked a trail camera during youth turkey season, and I had tons of shooter deer on it. And when I mean tons, I mean probably three for sure shooters. One was a maybe shooter. But the previous years I had no trail camera, like my trail cameras down in this little area sucked. So I just wrote it off for this last year. And so I'm curious.
And are you,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Just one clarifying question. Yeah. When you say you checked cameras when you were turkey hunting, mm-hmm. were these cameras you didn't check at all last fall? And so now you're seeing what happened last fall?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So I let these ones soak all fall. Never went, I think I, October 7th or 8th or something like that is when I checked them, and then I let them soak the entire summer, because two things. I feel like I got complacent just relying on cell cam data and didn't take the extra effort to go down into this long ass walk to go check these trail cameras. So my question to you is, do you have a scenario or an example of a time when you yourself wrote off a property, but it ended up being a mistake?
This seems like something that has happened to me, but I need to think for a moment about a good example of it.
Or maybe
where I need to come back to?
Because there's been some times throughout the years where, you know, so...
You know, I've kind of got an example, I guess.
Okay, go for it.
So it wasn't a place that I had hunted for a long time, but it was a place that I wrote off a little bit because it was a spot that I was hunting on another buddy's place that I had gotten permission to hunt with him when I was visiting from out of state. And it was a spot that I knew that he had hunted in the past and had not had luck with. And I had kind of wrote it off because of that. And then I went and hunted all these other places that I thought were interesting and spent a bunch of time chasing other leads and other places that I had scouted in the past, and got to the end of my trip and was striking out all these other areas. And then on my second to last day, I realized, you know what, you gotta reassess the cards in the deck. And so I was like, I'm gonna go do a speed scout of everything that I haven't touched, like anything I can hunt that I haven't hunted yet. I'm gonna speed scout it all and figure it out. And so I burned a bunch of boot leather like late morning through midday on the second to last day, and went through this zone that I had written off and hadn't touched. And I was like, ah, what an idiot. Like the most hot sign of anywhere, the most concentration of sign, like really good cover. Just completely had overlooked it.
Yeah.
Because on the map, it hadn't looked that great. And then lo and behold, I get in there and hunt the next day and have a great encounter and almost killed a big buck. So there's one example of writing something off, not from historical knowledge, but from taking, assumed knowledge from, you know, e-scouting and then intel from people passing it on.
Yeah, man, I tell you, I think one of the problems that as I get older and the amount of time that I can spend in the woods is reduced just because of family and schedule, that I have started to rely on my trail cameras too much. And so when I did go pull that card this turkey season, you know, the first pull probably didn't have too much on it, right? When I pulled it in early October, I was like, okay, well, there's nothing here. Which both of us know that trail cameras don't tell the whole story.
They tell a very tiny slice.
Very slight, yeah. And so, God, I think I fell for the trap. I fell into the trap. And I think I fell for not sitting enough in it. Like not giving putting my butt in a tree stand and observing with my own eyes of what was going on there.
Well, I think that cell cameras especially make us guilty of that. I think so many of us have become, you know, like you said, overly attached to what you're seeing on that mm-hmm. cell camera. And if the Bucks aren't showing up on cell camera, then you're just like, well, they're not there. Yep. It's not on yet. It's not happening yet. Or the place isn't any good right now. I certainly, like, I had a spot I had access to not last year, but 2 years ago. And I had, I put cell cameras out there, and it was dead on camera, and was like disheartened by it and thought to myself, geez, like, why even go?
Right.
And I maybe had four cameras spread out across, you know, two different pieces. But still with that, I was like, gosh, I should be seeing something on these scrapes. And I was just so dead set on that being the case. And then I went down there and in the hunting, I did go down hunt once for a decent chunk of time, and it wasn't that good. But I would later find out that, like, a property over here and a person over there, like, there are great deer in the area. There is action happening. I just remember after – I never had, like, the, oh, gosh, there was everything going on and I missed it. Yeah. But I remember at the end of the year chatting with some other folks in the area, it was just, like, another reminder, like, man, you short-sold this. Yeah. Like, they're absolutely – there is so much more going on. I remember, where was this? I can't remember this specific place last year where I was hunting, but I remember having this moment where, oh, I know what this was. A new property I got access to last year. You and I talked about this at some point last year. I got access to this place in a similar kind of situation. I put cameras out all over this place and never was getting a lot of deer on camera, never was getting decent bucks on mm-hmm. camera. It was like, kind of like, rah, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And then every time I hunted that farm, it was like a deer bonanza. Mm-hmm. There were deer all over the place. There were bucks cruising all over the place. And that was like just another one of those ahas. Like, you cannot trust that what's on your cell cams is everything. Like, there's right. so much that goes on beyond it. It might be 30 yards outside of the range or right behind or off to the side of it. Yep. Or your cell camera doesn't send every picture because there's tech glitches. Like, I'm getting more and more like, they're almost hurting me in many ways yeah. more than they're helping, because you start to think they're gospel truth right. and they just aren't.
Right. And so, I mean, I had this conversation with someone a while ago where I was basically just saying, the way I use cell cameras now versus when I first started using them, where when I first started using them, I was like, okay, are the deer here? Are there deer here? Well, now I know there's deer here because of, you know, several years of hunting experience. And I know that this terrain feature is going to be a good spot to set up on. And eventually some kind of deer movement will come through. And so what I think I did was I allowed myself to use trail cameras specifically. So I ultimately said, okay, now I want to attack the top tier animals. So I need to know if there is a shooter deer in these areas, working these areas. And so that's all I wanted. If there's one picture, then I can say to myself, hey, he's in the area. Maybe he's nocturnal, but he's here and it warrants me going to hunt this area. And so I think what happened was then I got too caught up in that, where I didn't learn, right? I didn't pay attention to rule number one. And that is that trail cameras don't tell the whole story. And just because I, you know, something can switch, something can happen. They could be taking different trails and things like that. And I got caught up in it, and I think it bit me in the ass.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I also think, like, we too quickly think that we know everything that's out there too. Mm-hmm. Like, you very quickly start thinking like, oh, if it's not a camera, it's not out there.
Yep.
I've certainly fallen prey to that, where I'm just like, well, there's not a buck I'm interested in hunting. Or there's not an old enough buck, or there's whatever, and then I just don't hunt there.
Yep.
And then, like, I've had, like, that new property I was talking about, you know, I had that kind of similar situation where, you know, just thinking, ah, gosh, there's nothing I want to hunt out here. And then you're out there and you see a brand new buck. Like, where did this buck come from?
Right.
And if that had been a mega giant that I never would have known and never showed up on camera, and I never would have been there to see it and have a chance at it. Like, you just got to hunt sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, a day in the tree stand is so much more valuable than 24 hours of camera work, I think, because you can see so much more. You can learn so much more. Not saying you want to be out there every single day mucking the place up, but observation with your own eyes is something that is becoming more and more rare, because more and more people want to just live and breathe with their cameras.
Yep.
And I think that's a big mistake.
Yep. I agree 100%. because it bit me in my butt. So, okay. Next scenario I have for you is something I am dealing with on a yearly basis now. We've talked about this new property that I have gained access to that is in a very good neighborhood. However, it is like 3.5 hours away from me. And the amount of acreage that I have access to hunt is much smaller than the farm that you've been on that we shed hunted all those years ago. Right. So I have, I have like 500 acres in one location altogether, a big, you know, I can bounce around several options. And then it's only like, realistically, I would be willing to do a day trip to it, basically. Even in, it's a 1 hour drive away from where I'm at. So if the situation called for it, I feel very comfortable driving there for just a one evening hunt and then driving back. 1 hour drive, mm-hmm. not too bad. Okay, the other one, smaller acreage, less, you know, setup locations, opportunities, just because of the layout and the size. But now you're committed to that area for X number of days or so. It's not a one day hunt thing. You know what I mean? It's not like an afternoon hunt. I'm not going to drive 6 total hours to hunt 2 or 3. So when I get there during the rut, I pretty much commit myself to that farm because it's kind of far away. And so my question is, how would you balance a smaller farm with less options at a longer distance away, as opposed to a closer farm with many options that may or may not have good quality deer on it?
So you're saying how to like allocate your time?
In a way, yeah. Because trail cameras last year on the close farm were indicating that there wasn't something I'm too terribly excited to chase. Meanwhile, other farm, shooters on camera.
Which is the other farm?
The smaller one.
Smaller farm has shooters on camera. Yeah.
Smaller farm, longer distance to travel.
Yeah, so I think that I would, I mean, it comes down to your goals. Mm-hmm. And so if you have goals and that, like, there's a certain caliber of deer that you are really after, and that deer is like readily available on the smaller farm, I wouldn't be afraid to spend a lot of time there. I mean, how small is it?
Well, I'll put it this way. It's 240 acres, but I would say of the 240, there's probably 30 acres or now I'm going to say probably 20 acres of huntable area on this. The rest of it is all ag.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have fewer options with something like that. But I guess what I would probably be doing is, when you've got those sweet spots of conditions and timing that line up, mm-hmm. when you really think like, man, this is my window, and you're wanting to, like, I would look at, you know, hunting that small piece as like a checking account. You've got a certain amount of money in that checking account. And every time you hunt it, you are withdrawing money out of that checking account by putting pressure on that farm, by hunting those handful of stand sites you've got on the small farm. You're taking money out. Mm-hmm. When you take that money out, you have the opportunity to invest that money in stocks or whatever. So there's opportunity for upside by doing that, but you're also, you know, hurting your future dollar amount in your checking account because you're spending your pressure points, we'll call them. When you've got that big cold front, when it's late October or November or whenever you historically have seen the best opportunities there, I would be fine, you know, investing a big chunk of my time and taking a lot of money on checking, because your opportunity for ROI is so much higher, yeah. Even though you're stuck with just a handful of good sites. Because if the place is that good, then hunting your three only options, but they're all really good options, that's like worth burning out the farm. Because, okay, here's worst case scenario. You've got your three stand sites on your best farm, and there's big bucks on camera, and you've seen them in the past, and you've got good conditions lined up. So you've got your rutcation, and you've got a 5-day window where it looks like really cold or whatever the thing is that you want. Make the drive out there and start doing it. worst case scenario, you hunt for 3-4 days or whatever it is, and it's just not happening, and you burn the farm out. And the very worst thing is you got to drive 3 hours back to go hunt your 500-acre farm for a handful of days and then go home.
Yeah.
Like, you always have that as a great backup location. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're going to burn out all your stuff.
Yeah.
And even if you're wasting your time, you're wasting your time in the highest odds location, and then you've got an unbelievable fallback plan.
Yeah.
On the flip side, if you're hunting the location where you don't have any sign of something you're really excited about, then you're bouncing all over the place. Great. But if you're bouncing all over the place and there just isn't the kind of deer you want to hunt, then back on the small farm, big guys are rolling past your three stand sites over and over and over again. Well, that seems like a missed opportunity. So I wouldn't be afraid to put time, like if that's where the deer are that you want to hunt, put that time there. But I will say, going back to our first question, try not to depend just on cameras.
Right.
Like give spots some opportunity to observe, to like, go out there and scout with your feet on the ground and actually see like, hey, is this actually like, are there a pile of mega rubs on one knob over than where I usually have my camera? And I just don't realize that deer movement has changed this year compared to years past. Cause like, you know, historically your 500-acre farm has got a lot of good deer in the area. Like it's not a bum location.
Right.
It's world-class compared to most people's stuff. So it's nothing to snuff at.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The next kind of scenario I want to run through here is kind of a wind access and wind direction scenario. This happened to me, oh man, it was like 3 years ago. And I'll just lay out the scenario here. See a buck, shooter caliber, 3 days in a row, come through the area. I'm in the same stand 3 days in a row. He comes from the same area, different trails. I'm set up right in the center. I have great access. He never spooks me. Same wind direction. I think it was a west wind. I saw him come through out of this bedding, but he took different routes every single time. And they were outside of shooting. I think the last time he might have even been on a doe. But there was a wind shift. All right. I still can get in there with good access. To that area. Do I hunt that same stand given this wind shift after 3 days of consistent winds and consistent sightings, or do I make an adjustment based off where I think he's going to go with this new wind shift?
That's a tough one and something I wrestle with a lot. I think the biggest thing I'd be thinking about, the first thing I'd think about is why did the deer go through the air he did when he did, mm-hmm. and was he using the wind to do that?
Yeah,
we like to say that bucks always try to use the wind, but they don't always. Mm-hmm. I've seen bucks move through an area plenty of times with the wind at their tail, mm-hmm. with that they're not using their wind. Like sometimes the food source they want to get to and where the best bedding is just doesn't work for the wind, but they're not going to go and feed in a parking lot.
Right.
Even though the wind's great for the parking lot, they're not going to the parking lot, or they're not going to go to the yard, or they're not going to go to the dirt field or the pond. Sometimes they just have to go somewhere because that's the place they want to go and the wind's not right. So first I would say, was the wind dictating what that buck did the last 3 days? Mm-hmm. If it's not, like if he was there because he was with a doe 3 days in a row and it didn't really matter that the wind was blowing from the west, then maybe I would stick it out in the same place and hope that this time again, like, because poor group of does in here, and if that stand location you think gives you the best chance to eventually have them come through, then you know maybe sticking it out's the best thing. Yeah. On the flip side, if the answer is like the reason why he was coming through in the general area he was because it was like a wind dependent thing, like he was coming downwind of a bedding area over and over and over again, well then yeah, if that wind's gonna be different, then he might want to check that bedding air again, mm-hmm. but it seemed like he was using the wind to check it, so he's maybe going to use this new wind direction to check it, and so I would be adjusting that.
Yeah.
So that'd be the first thing I'd be thinking about is this movement I'm seeing wind related. Mm-hmm. But I will say another thing is that I have gone through a couple different like phases of how I hunt. I originally, when I first started like targeting mature bucks, I just thought like, and this is not news to you, Dan, we've talked about this in the past, but I'll say it again. I originally took like the brute force approach where I just kind of, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I just thought I'll hunt a lot and I'll hunt the few places I kind of know and put a lot of time out there and that'll work out. And that didn't always work out. And then I got to being mobile. And then I was like, you got to keep the deer on their toes. You got to move around all the time. You got to use most recent intel and bounce to where you last saw him. So I was moving all the time. I'd hunt one spot, see the buck somewhere else. Then the next day I'd go to where I saw him. And I'd hunt there. And then he'd be somewhere else. And then I'd go there the next day. And then he'd be somewhere else. And so I'd be chasing deer a day behind him for weeks on end. And that didn't always work out. And I've kind of circled back to a little bit more of a middle ground now, in which I still want to be mobile and I still want to adjust based on what I'm seeing. But I've also come to realize that, you know, there's still a certain level of randomness or a cycle to a lot of deer. They don't, not saying this never happens because it does happen, but deer in most like real world scenarios that I've seen at least, they don't often do the same thing over and over and over again. So if you see them come out of the corner of the field yesterday, unless it's like early season, you know, September, August, and they're on that early season food pattern, it's really hard to say they're going to be there in that exact same place again the next day.
Yeah.
But give me a 3-day window, and, you know, within a 3-day window, they might come back through there again.
Yeah.
So I've started leaning towards, you know, when the signs point to a specific location being the right spot and the conditions are right for it, I'm giving my spots a little bit more time now. So when there's a location where, like, man, the wind's right for me to be here, I'm not spooking deer being here. You know, like let's just say it's like kind of a scenario like you're talking about. Like, let's, or the one I kind of just imagined that being there's like an epic doe bedding area. Mm-hmm. And like, I know there's a bunch of does in here. And I know historically bucks always like to be here. And let's say I'm after one of like two mature bucks in the zone, and I'm set up in this great location where I'm downwind of the doe bedding area, and there's some terrain that funnels deer past this tree. Like it checks all the boxes. It's rock solid. But the last 2 days, I've seen the bucks I'm after, and they're a different place. They're in the zone, but they're out of range. In the previous version of me, I would have chased them out of range every time. The new version where I've kind of settled now is like, if this spot is the spot and I have really good reason to believe it, I'm actually better give this 3 days or 2 days or whatever it is that I have that window. Because, yeah, he was there yesterday and he was here the next place, but that third day or that second day, he's going to come through here eventually. And if I'm constantly trying to go where he was yesterday, I'm going to be 1 day behind him. He's going to be at the perfect spot I just described that I was in on Monday, and I'll have been in the next place. And so sometimes I think it's worth giving it time.
Yeah.
If you can get there without, as long as you're not spooking deer over and over, as long as deer aren't smelling you and you're not spooking with your exit and all that stuff.
Yeah. Man, that's something that in the past I've struggled with the most, is knowing when to stay and knowing when to leave. Right. I mean, yeah. It's like, I've showed you the pictures of that absolute giant that I was chasing, what, like in 2018 and 19. And I was doing that with him. I felt like I was bouncing on too many ridges over the course of a 7-day window, a 7-day period, when I think I should have just sat tight, because the time that I did see him, he was on one ridge over, and so I moved over to that ridge the next day, maybe on a wind that wasn't the greatest. I don't think I spooked him, but then I just kept moving too much, and I think I should give it some more time. But then there's also times where in the past where I have said, okay, I got trail camera pictures of him here. I've seen him on the hoof in this area, in this terrain feature, so I'm just going to park it, and hopefully he comes through. Well, just because it's daylight doesn't mean he's not coming through, you know, in the middle of the night. And so he did come through a couple times middle of the night, but just never when I was there in that tree stand. And I think I probably should have flanked a little bit, but I never did. So that was on a different buck, but still, that's something that I struggle with every year. Even out west, when I'm not in a tree stand and I'm glassing a ridge system, or I see a group of deer and I go back to them and I say, okay, well, historically I've seen groups of deer here every year, so I'm going to come back to it and come back to it. And then eventually I'm just wasting too much time.
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to like just that question, the ultimate question, which is why?
Yeah.
why was he in this place that you observed him? And like, if it's a random rut movement, like a mistake, back to my mistakes, like I used to move on random rut movement. I would see a buck just like cruising through an area,
yep,
and then think like, okay, I should be there. Mm-hmm. And, but there's no other like big reason for him to have been there.
Yeah.
But if there's like, maybe you see a deer do something and then you go scout it at midday and then you realize like, oh wow, mm-hmm, why was he here? Well, it's because there's a saddle in this ridge and there's, or maybe like this is the only place they can cross the creek easily, or maybe they're like, you don't know what it is, but there's
right,
sometimes, oftentimes there's a real reason why deer do what they're doing.
Yep.
Sometimes it's less so.
Yeah.
If you see a buck come out in a specific spot and it's because there's an apple tree on the corner of the field there, well then yeah, don't count on him happening to cycle your way the next day 150 yards away if it's September 15th if you don't have an apple tree in front of it, right?
Yeah.
Like if you see something like that, like they're keyed into a mass producing tree, or there's a little water hole, or if there's like a particular draw to a spot, then you got to move on that right away.
Right.
But if it's more like, man, he's cruising, or they're just kind of in and around, or they're chasing does, and it's less pinpoint, well then the kind of stick it out in one spot that has the right features eventually maybe makes more sense.
Gotcha. All right. Mark Kenyon's thoughts on, and this isn't really a scenario, this is just a question. Your thoughts on mock scrapes.
I love them for cameras. Mm-hmm. That's the way they're the most helpful for me. Like yeah, anytime I put up a trail camera, literally anytime, whether it's July, September, November, it's going to be with a mock scrape or a real scrape in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the summertime when they're not actively making scrapes, you know, as I know you've seen too, like they are checking those licking branches. They are scoping it out. So it becomes a natural concentration point for deer. So I love mock scrapes. If I'm hunting like a new area and I'm trying to, you know, put up cameras to try to figure it out quickly, that's definitely going to be part of my strategy. Again, like try to find a zone that should be good for a camera, like a funnel, a natural funnel, a creek crossing, a ditch crossing, like a big central area where a bunch of points all drop down to a basin or something, like a spot like there should be a lot of deer concentrating. Well, then I'm going to make a mock scrape there if there's not already one. Oftentimes there is one.
Yeah.
But if there's not, I'm going to make the mock scrape there to enhance that camera location. I will sometimes create mock scrapes in a hunting scenario to give me a little bit. I'm not looking at it as an attraction. Like I don't think a mock scrape is going to attract a deer to my stand location, but I will make a mock scrape to get a stopping point, like to get a deer to stop in a spot where I want for a shot. Or if I think like maybe it's like a field, like a little opening, like a meadow in the middle of some woods, maybe let's just hypothetically say, and I know like, hey, I think there'll be some deer feeding on this clover that's in here, or this like kind of native browse. But I don't know it well enough to know if they're going to come out on this side or that side. You know, maybe I'll make a mock scrape within range so that I might get them to move that 10 extra yards to come hit that scrape that is in range. But that would only be a thing I would do if I already had to be out at that location, either way ahead of time. Like if there's a scenario where I can make this mock scrape well ahead of time of hunting, I will do that. But if I'm like on a run and gun hunt, new place, and I find this tree that I want to hunt, I'm like, oh, this is the spot to hunt, I am not going to walk any further away from my tree stand location than I have to. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to put my scent anywhere else. So if my pathway from wherever I was to this tree, if that route took me past a spot that makes sense for a mock scrape, then sure, I may make a mock scrape. But I'm not going to find the tree I want to hunt and then walk 20 yards further and add 20 more yards of a scent trail ahead of me. I won't do that.
Yeah.
I would always prefer like the lack of scent on the ground and on any branches or grass. Like, I would always prefer that as a benefit over whatever added benefit of putting a mock scrape in front of me. Cause I've had too many times where a deer crosses your scent trail and hangs up and busts out of there. Yeah. So I will only make a mock scrape if it's something I can do well ahead of time or without adding new scent.
Yeah.
From a hunting perspective.
Yeah. That's a great point. I just think you know, everybody's looking for some kind of shortcut or like ultimate strategy, whether it, maybe it comes to calling or put just whatever gets somebody closer to deer. And I think that what I've learned in the past two seasons, I feel like my setups now are, especially on in the non-mobile tree stand setups or the non-saddle moving saddle platforms, where they're there, right? They're that's a good rut funnel. It, I mean, the funnel's not going to change. Deer are going to come through it. They're going to be moving during the breeding season. I'm going to put something there on those tree stands. I almost am moving forward. I'm going to put a mock scrape within shooting range of every single tree stand that I have for one reason. And it, like you said, it's not like an attractant from the sense of a food plot or a rattle, like a rattling antlers. But I think what it does is when they come through a terrain feature naturally, they're just going to put their nose up to come maybe take 5-10 steps closer to it to investigate it.
Yeah.
And I think that right there, if when done properly, I mean, just ask our buddy Troy Pottinger about it, there's something to that. Now, I haven't done it quite yet, but this year is probably going to be the year I do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things, like it's a 2% thing. Right. It might give you a 2% bump in your odds.
Right.
But as we know, like when it comes to hunting mature bucks, you need so many of those little 2% details to stack up for it to come together. Right. And there's so many of those things that are outside of our control. If there is something I can add, if there's a little bit more I can use to stack the deck, even that little bit of 2% will help. So yeah, with like your permanent stand setups, I'm in the same boat as you, Dan. I will make every one of those little tweaks. I will add the mock scrape. I will, you know, lean over a tree over that one trail that's out of range so that hopefully more of the deer come by the in range trail. Mm-hmm. I'll make sure that my entry trail is trimmed so I've got a quiet route out. And you know, all those little details separate don't look like much, but when you stack up 15 of those little 2%ers, it makes all the difference in the world.
Right. Right. That's a fact, man. Okay. One of the last questions I have here is a out of state planning preparation type thing. I think I'm going to run into a scenario where over the last couple years, I just tried to do one out of state hunt and then focus on Iowa. Well, I drew South Dakota this year, and based off of, and this is nothing but statistics, I'm probably going to draw Kansas as well. So now I have two places where I know if I put in the right amount of time, I can, you know, with all, like every year I strike out in South Dakota is just another year. I look at it as almost another year getting closer to success because of all the knowledge and experience that I've gained there.
Yeah.
Kansas is going to be more of a Iowa hunting scenario, you know, like being mobile, hunt, running, gunning in timber and things like that. But I'm going to draw both probably this year. And so my question to you is, have you ever had to balance out hunts from a time perspective so that you can fit two good hunts or try to fill two tags within this time frame that we all want to be in the woods when it's the best possible time, right? And so bouncing around to essentially three different states, three different areas of, and trying to get the job done in the best, during the best time, if possible. Have you ever had to do that?
Yeah. Probably every year for the last 10, maybe something like that. So definitely a challenge. A lot of variables to think about. I think probably the biggest thing that I'm thinking about there, Dan, is like, which one of the locations is time of year dependent the most?
Yeah.
So like that's a big thing. It's like there'll be certain places where you really need it to be early season for that to work. Like maybe the South Dakota thing, you've got that like early green food source and you know like, man, I kinda gotta be there for that to get this strategy to work.
Yeah.
But in Kansas, you know, I don't know what's going on there. It's brand new to me. I'm really gonna be depending on like rut activity for like the basic creek bottom funnel thing to work. So I would lean into like that kind of place where it's like time of year dependent. And then maybe Iowa, it's like, well, I've hunted it forever. I know it very well.
Yeah.
I've seen what they're doing in October. I've seen what they're doing in November. I've even done a little bit in December. You know, I would probably be thinking about in that way.
Yeah.
So the newer places or the harder places, you know, I usually end up emphasizing rut hunts because it's just easier.
Yeah.
The place, when I know a place well, I hopefully know enough to be able to figure out how to kill it in different times. So like a lot of my hunts, like on my local Michigan stuff, are actually around the edges. It's not during the best rut stuff. Cause I know like, hey, I can probably figure out a way to get it done December here, or yeah, I can probably figure it out in early October. And then my big traveling hunts will be like those banger dates. Yeah. It'll be like the best rut dates for this state, or I'll plan like an out-of-state hunt for that opening weekend or opening week, because that's another really good zone. So usually I'm spreading it out in that kind of way.
Yeah.
I've also done some, though, where it's like weather specific. So I've done some years where I'll be looking at the weather, the extended forecast, and I'll see like a front will hit a different location at different times. So I'll find out that, man, like the cold front is going to be happening in Iowa the first week of November, but it'll be warming up 5 days later there and then cooling down in Ohio 5 days later. So yeah, I'll bounce locations based on how the weather's moving to try to get the better weather patterns as I split my time apart as well.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just like also like what your goals are, what's around too. Like I say all this knowing the risk of what we talked about at the beginning. Like you can't always be guaranteed that what you have on camera or what you've seen so far this season guarantees what's out there. But if you go out there and set cameras in Kansas and you've got your stuff in Iowa and you find out like, man, there's like a once in a lifetime buck in Kansas and you just got kind of your average 4 and 5 year old bucks in Iowa, then I wouldn't be afraid to like chase something extra special and something new as yeah, well. Also new properties in general, like if you've got the opportunity to hunt a new place and you think it's really great, you know, putting in some extra time early. And when I say early, I mean like your first year hunting it. And I know you can only draw like so many times, but I wouldn't be afraid to give more time to Kansas or South Dakota than Iowa, just because, I mean, you've hunted South Dakota a lot, yeah, but yeah, like I wouldn't be afraid to give Kansas a big chunk of time. Cause again, like, you know how to get it done at home in Iowa. Yeah. You've done it a lot of times.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be afraid to invest extra in the new place for, A, it's going to take, it might take more time to get it done because you're learning as you go. B, you know, the opportunity just to become a better hunter is a lot higher in Kansas because like you're being forced to be in a new place, like dramatically different in some ways, different state, a lot of stuff's going to be different. So you're going to be learning on the fly and that's all going to make you better in Iowa someday too.
Yeah.
So I would look at it as an investment, not just in filling a tag, but it's like an investment in your skill set too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to do that. Right off the top, I envision myself going to South Dakota for the non-resident opener October 1st and then hunting a week there and coming home for 2 weeks. And knowing that that my Iowa spots are pretty solid all the way and we don't have a gun season up until December, so I feel like I could probably get away with hunting Iowa in a second, third week, November type scenario, thus doing Kansas that first week in November. You know, my uncle lives down there. He seems to think that Iowa is a week earlier for rut than where he is down there. So if I feel that November 7th is the peak here in Iowa or when things really start to kick off, then it would be the 14th in there. And so the other scenario for me would be potentially hunting that pre-rut in Iowa and then floating down the next week to Kansas to hunt that 14th, third week of November down there, ahead of their firearm season.
You know, and one other thing to think about is Kansas opens up well ahead of Iowa too, right? I mean, they've got that early season, like September hunt, which can be a really good time to kill a deer. And then it's also just a great way to learn the property a little bit before you go during that later time. So if you can manage to get away for a little bit of time in September, like you can't hunt in your other spots, it's a great time to learn and maybe get a lucky shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man, I don't know. I was sitting downstairs. My kids were playing some video games, and I'm sitting down there watching them play, and then I start looking at all my mounts that I have downstairs. And I'll be honest, man, the fire for this upcoming year has kind of started. I feel like I usually don't get too fired up until after the 4th of July, maybe even into August. But there's something in me this year that is excited for the upcoming hunting season more than normal.
That's good, dude.
Yeah.
I'm glad for you. I'm a little bit behind you. Too focused on a tarpon fishing trip coming up in a week and a half. So maybe once I get that out of my system, I'll be ready to get ridiculously excited about whitetails again.
Dude, that sounds fun.
So this conversation helped.
Yeah. Here, I got to tell you something, though.
I got to time out, though. I'm sorry, real quick. I got to leave in like 3 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Pick up my son.
3 minutes. Real quick. Talk to people about hunting. And what I mean by that is anytime you get an opportunity to talk to somebody about hunting, talk to them about hunting, because A, you never know who's a hunter, or B, you never know who doesn't hunt, but whose family owns a farm. Or in my scenario, I had my son's birthday party this year and this weekend, and one of his best friend's dad's family or grandpa owns a 25,000 acre ranch in Wyoming that has, he showed me a picture of his rifle elk, magnum, giant elk, mule deer. And so some of it is a pay to play type system where you have to pay a trespassing fee and then you can go hunt it. But that right there is just kind of like a badass thing that just, cause we were talking about, I was wearing a Vortex t-shirt and he goes, so what gun do you have on, what do you have on your firearms? And I'm just like, well, you know, I don't have a lot of firearms, but I got this and this and whatever. And then he's like, okay, well, here, check out this elk I shot. I'm like, uh-oh, where'd you shoot that? And then the story unraveled, and I feel like I got a little bit of an in. I mean, it's a starting point, right? Maybe it turns out to be a no, or they treat me like every other, like if it's outfitted or something. But I got pretty fired up about that right there.
Yeah. You never know what'll come with those conversations. So that's exciting.
Yep. Well, Mr. Kenyon, you have a good rest of your day. Go get your boy. And I appreciate you taking time to do this.
It was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that chance to walk back on memory lane and think about my Coast Guard Festival days.
There you go.